Gaining the centre, regaining centre, not finding something that, or making something, it's returning or refreshing or fully affirming something. And what's the sense of relieving ourselves from the push and the pull, the jangle and the frazzle, the weight that leaves us unbalanced, heavy, shaking. And this is how the stress, the random and sometimes painful nature of conditioned existence, sights, sounds, touches, perceptions, human actions, how they affect us. The effect, their abrasive or contradictory or impactful effect, gets internalized. And then we get this internal discord, stress, agitation, anger, frustration. They take on these emotional forms. And then the sense of balance and lightness is lost. In fact, it may be something we've so lost touch with, we don't even really recognize it's there. That's why the practices of meditation are primarily to get enough stability and wholeness to have a wholeness around all that stuff, all that's going on, and to recognize in that sense of the attention and awareness being whole and extended, which is a conscious act that we undertake. It takes quite a lot of training to go against our reactions, but actually once that wholeness is established, we begin to sense, that's interesting, because now I'm kind of witnessing all this stuff, or noticing it rather than actually being it. You know, rather than being angry, I'm kind of witnessing anger, or I'm aware of my anger. You know, this is not an unusual experience. It's not that difficult to do. Difficulty, of course, is to sustain it and not to just go back into that emotional upheaval and complain about it or feel bad about it or blame somebody for it or get reactive. And this contraction, when we go back into an emotional pattern and contract, that quality of wholeness is lost, and we just become obsessed with that. We lose the big picture. We lose, sometimes you even lose sight, sound. You don't really see what's going on around you. You're so embroiled in that emotion. And that's not the only thing, because we get attitudes as well, and attitudes are the kind of they're the kind of frozen patterns. So I have a defensive attitude because I find, you know, impingement upsets me, so I defend myself. There's a defensive attitude, which means I don't notice things, I shut them off. I live in my own bubble, fill myself up with what I like, everybody else is just wallpaper, and so I've got this closed attitude. And that kind of seems to get me through. I get quite interesting things I can play with in my mind, some ideas, philosophies, so forth, but actually I'm really out of touch with what's going on in the immediate here and now. And this is not unusual. Because for the untrained mind, it is very difficult to sustain that wholeness in a world of impact. And this begins very early, in early childhood, even, you know, where we come out pretty open, and then the impacts of what's disagreeable, insecure, unstabilized causes us to kind of close a bit, and we go into our toys, fantasies, and that goes on till people are 60 years old and still playing with different kinds of toys. sometimes they're called weapons, yeah, or obsessions or hobbies, something to fill up the centre with something that they can kind of fondle and play with and get involved with. That actually means we don't have to be so open. We can sit in our little rooms and play with our ideas and our notions and our so forth. And some of them are quite bright, quite interesting. They're not necessarily bad. You know. But the preoccupation that we see is very common for people, you know, just getting through in their lives. You know, you go to any public situation, most people are just buzzing away in their heads, crashing past each other, you know. They're not really tuned in because they just can't do it. You know, just to sit quietly with nothing going on, without reading something, switching on a phone, having a chat itself, which is quite already a bit of a practice, you know. Okay, well, yeah, that's nice, and now to sustain it. It's not even that painful, it's just kind of a bit, feels a bit empty, and we need to do something. And so the whole of our nervous system gets attuned to this, well, do something, think something, remember something. And it's no longer conscious, it becomes a kind of set pattern. And then various attitudes can come up to justify. I can't just sit around doing nothing all my life. No, not all your life, 10 minutes. Try 10 minutes, not all your life, just 10 minutes. I don't see the point of that. I mean, right, just 10 minutes, that's all. Yeah. And you get attitudes, yeah. These are, you could say, are frozen emotions, because what's the emotion underneath that? I can't manage. I need something. I'm hungry. I need something to feed on. Okay, that's honest. That's good, yeah. I can relate to that. But then if once you recognize that, at least we're in something, okay, we can explore it. What is this hunger? What is it based upon? What are the results? What does it feel like? Where does it happen? Where's the energy of that pushing? And what can I just be with that? And okay, everybody's happy, everybody's craving. Everybody gets that. What's it like if we just kind of, you know, kind of form a circle around that and listen to it? And maybe, you know, with a kindly intention. It's okay. No judgments, no blaming, no attack here. And it's interesting that when one cultivates that, sometimes that kind of hunger turns into something rather sad. Well, I don't know where I am. I'm helpless. Compassion. You know, so this gathering around, you know. And so when we notice these attitudes come up in our life, they're often the emotions we kind of can recognize, because they seem big and volatile. It's attitudes and views that become difficult. I remember somebody kind of saying, well, you know, I'm a man, we don't talk about our feelings. We don't talk about feelings. And I'm thinking, well, actually, you just said something about feeling, didn't you? You don't like it. That's an emotion. You already said it. When you said, I'm a man, we don't talk about feelings, that's an emotion, isn't it? That's a feeling. And you use the expression we to somehow make that the social norm, that gives it some amplification. If you say, I don't feel comfortable with talking about emotions, okay, that, yeah, great, I can get with that, I could be with that. I don't always feel that good about it myself. You know, some of them rather don't fit my self-image when I get a bit anxious or feeble or nervy, you know, and I'm supposed to be a good, competent, regular guy, and I feel a bit fragile. I don't really want to publicise it, but maybe that's what happens, you know. Maybe we should kind of reset what the man is, instead of being kind of tough and impervious and da 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 da. Perhaps everybody's just kind of got some fragile bits and some nervy bits and some impulsive bits, and let's open it up. And maybe we could look at that, and maybe we did talk about it. There would be a bit of a circle of, oh yeah, and love would come through. You know, something healing would come through. Another one I remember hearing: I'm not being defensive. I just thought I'd talk about it. I'm not being defensive. It's obviously being defensive. You just said it. It means the signal is right there, isn't it? Okay, you're not being defensive. How's it feel not being defensive? I don't want to talk about it. Well, okay, well, you know, it's up to you, but why don't you explore why you don't want to talk about it? Because you feel defensive. Because you feel frightened. You don't feel embarrassed. You feel impacted. It's just too tender. It's just too difficult. You know, just give me some space. Okay. You know, let's get realistic about it all. You know, so this kind of delusion prevents us from actually getting in touch with what could be healed. If we don't acknowledge there is some dis-ease, how can we heal it? So, you know, we begin to really review that idea of I am. I am, I always am. You can rely on me, I'm always this, I'm always that, I always will be, I've got to be. I'm obliged to be solid and strong, therefore I will be. Oh yeah? Well, that's going to kill you, isn't it? You just signed yourself a death certificate. For an amount, you know, huge amounts of stress. And yet a good-natured person can kind of have this sense, it's my duty, my obligation is to be there for everybody else. Wouldn't sign that one if I were you. So I'll do the best I can within my limitations, and at a certain point say, I think I got to the end of it right now. Just give me a moment. No. Just no. It's not aggressive. It's just no. Not right now. I'm open, but that's the limit. And if we can maintain that limit, then I'm sure the best will come out. You know? And in the, it's a kind of pragmatic advice for daily life, isn't it? Because I think human beings by and large are fundamentally good intentioned. There's a lot of goodness and goodwill, and I think probably, I don't know, but I think most people in their day want to start their thinking, yeah, I'm going to try and do some good, you know, try and sort that out, help her, phone him, must remember that, you know, get on with that, that'll sort that out, yeah, you know, so the intention is to, you know. You don't think, how can I screw everybody up? I mean, unless you're really damaged. So how does it get you kind of find yourself kind of signing these obligation contracts without really knowing it? Because it's what we should do. You know, once you get one of these should-bes, you really know that's the sound of suffering. You've got a should be, you can say, just wait a few moments because suffering's right on its way. It'll be with you quicker than the post, the courier from Joburg. Absolutely. Once you get a should be in, because, you know, you can feel the stress start. You're trying to solidify into something. And that solidifying, which goes by the rather unpleasant term, grasping, clinging, attachment, solidifying into being a fixed identity, which of course social pressures want us to be a fixed identity. You're the so-and-so who will always be this for me. I can rely upon you always be there for me to do this, that and the other. That's what I want. If you do that, I'll smile at you and say thank you. Yeah, it's nice. That's respect, polite. But actually, I can't do it. I can do the best I can, but I can't be what you want me to be, because what you want me to be is an idea in your mind. Right? It's an idea, a hope, a wish in your mind. That's in your mind. It's not out here, it's not me. Right? That's a wish in your mind. How can a wish in your mind be me? They're separate things, aren't they? And I'm this constant wave of changing. When I get into what I experience myself as being, it's a kind of waving, changing form of sensations, energies, fatigue, non-fatigue, vigor, interest, humor, you know, playfulness, irritation, sadness. It's this whole mix of stuff going on. You know, if I'm not, it's not bad, but it's certainly shifting. And so then if I want to actually, you know, I can certainly try to hold it together for a particular purpose or a function, get some focus on that and bring all I can into it. But still I can't live up to an expectation, because an expectation is a fantasy. You know? Not a reality. And it, you know, if we want to regain the center, first of all, we've got to regain truth. And get used to truth. And ask for truth. And the truth is, once we begin to say the different levels of truth, the first level of truth is this is what's happening. Second level of truth, you can say, is I'm aware of what's happening. There can be an awareness that is able to encompass what's happening without adding, subtracting, reacting. It's called mindfulness. So mindfulness is like, you could say it's a space. In some sense, it's a ring, it kind of covers things, like a loop, gets around the experience. And what we want to do in our training is to make sure the loop is big enough, steady enough to get all of it. It's not just the kind of little tiny bit of me. If it is, that's going to leave big chunks out. Yeah, I can be pretty mindful in a nice, quiet, peaceful place, and nobody's bothering me, and I got my mind, and I got, yeah. And then you disturb my mindfulness. That sound disturbed my mindfulness. That person disturbed my mindfulness. That insect disturbed my mindfulness. Everything disturbs my mindfulness. Well, it's not very good mindfulness, then, is it? If it's just that fragile, that little ant can disturb it. So I want you to expand the mindfulness to get it around all these things. You know, when you think the Buddha sitting out under a Bodhi tree in India, you know, there's no air conditioning, didn't have a zafu, there's probably bugs and ants crawling all over the place. So I'm saying, I can't meditate here. It's not fair. How are you supposed to get enlightened in a place like this? Okay, this is this. In that sense, and the rather revealing thing is when we do encompass all of it, the irritations and the phenomena, And there's a sense of a quiet center starts to be discerned in this. That's, it's not resisting, it's not contracting, it's not fighting, it's not holding on, it's just, what's that? How come? Well, that's the way it is. That's a realization. The center can be realized. Often fuzzy. I don't really get it. So you know, you don't really get it. So you just keep doing the practices that will bring that around. So some degree of faith arises. Yeah. It's possible. Things are possible. Put some effort in. Put some energy into it. Stay present. Accept things. Accept the presence of the unpleasing, the boring, the inconclusive, the tedious, the frustrating. You know, we like them, but hey, this is the deal. And rather than get up these ricochet waves of restlessness and irritation and so forth. No, it's an alternative. Okay. What is this? And you know, in that inclusion, the wholeness, there's a kind of, one begins to sense there's a kind of a resonant field. So this wholeness and whole mindfulness tunes it into a resonant field, which is sympathetic. It's empathetic. It's the citta, this is citta, or the phenomena that arise, are phenomena that impact what is impacted. What does it mean to experience impact? Something shivers, doesn't it? Door bangs, you jump. Something shivers. The citta is a resonant field, and it picks up signals. And it resonates with them. Mm-hmm. Now the untrained jitta, when it resonates with them, goes into shock patterns or desire patterns. I want this, I don't want that. It goes in, and the waves get choppy. Jitta starts getting stirred. So the practice is, can we experience that? Can those impacts be discerned? And a little shock wave ripple occurs. And the citta, instead of contracting onto that, jumping onto that, just lets that ripple travel through. So this is kind of, you know, more than a technique, it's a training in which we begin to, in holding that model, we sense the impact, contact, or contact impressions, right? And then what actually does contact the citta? Okay. Well, he said this to me yesterday, and it's really so rude and impolite, and Just a moment. What's contacting your citta? Well, after all I did, he said this yesterday. Yeah, okay. So what is actually, just can you kind of refine it? That memory. Okay, that memory. That's called perception. Perception. Contact. Perception. So when there's contact, perception. And what else? Feeling. Unpleasant feeling. That contacted it. Perception, feeling. So then, and then it's kind of really, I recognize, geez, this guy is such a, whoa, that's called sankhara, the reaction to it. And these are called the aggregates, some of the aggregates anyway. So this kind of, and then one is in it, one's in that. This being in it is called clinging. It means it's a contraction. It's just this amount of turbulence. The jitta can't maintain its open steadiness. It just contracts. And then we get a locked emotion, and it just jing, 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 goes on and on, stirring. And every time it dies down, the memory comes back, and then the sankhara reaction starts again, the feeling, and it just, until we think, oh God, I'm upset, this guy, I'm crazy, I go, God, I can't stand it. It becomes an I am. Mm. Through the lack of development of citta, it just hasn't really done that for development, to be able to hold that openness. Now, the two cultivations which are immensely important for sustaining that resonance, one, it's very obvious in many ways, it's the qualities of goodwill, metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha. Goodwill, just basic willingness, non-aversiveness. A sense of heart is warm rather than shut or frozen or tense. The warm-hearted quality. There's a resonance there. It's a gentle, suffusive quality. Karuna, sympathetic quality that is inclined towards healing, protecting that which is damaged or sore, whether it's in yourself or another, it doesn't really matter as far as karuna goes. Mudita, that which is able to tune in and feel gladdened by that which is skillful in yourself or in others, in the past, somewhere else, anywhere in the citta's territory. And upekkha, the ability to accept the ups and downs without jumping up or crashing down. It's the movements of approval and disapproval. It releases those movements. And this is citta's territory. These are called treasures of the citta. Yeah, because they set up a particular suffusive pattern, and they're timeless. Means I can consider someone I met 15 years ago who inspired me and still get that sense of, oh yeah, that's right, I'm really gladdened, I'm so grateful, he was such a beautiful person, da 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 da, and the heart brightens. We all can do this. So in other words, it's not stuck in time or place. And that's also the nature of citta. It doesn't exist in time and place, it exists in terms of karma, events that have touched it, meanings that have gladdened or depressed it. And of course we have meanings get stuck in the citta which are extremely uninspiring. You could do your list, couldn't you? Of things you can remember that were really quite hurtful, disrespectful, betraying, and so forth. So the citta also has these. And what it tends to do with these, because these are rather unpleasant, deeply fracturing, it set up such a negative thing, is it kind of, okay, I don't want to feel that anymore. So it closes. So we get closed down sadness, of the lack of love, care that was extended when it was needed. It's closed down. Perhaps I'm just not a very nice person. I don't deserve very much. You get an attitude. So when you get an attitude, it's a closed down emotion. Yeah. So the attitude, well, I don't really deserve very much. I'm not that, not really worthwhile person, I'm probably in all these people who can do a lot better than I can, and I'm just not really as good as they are. How's that feel? Well, you have to accept the fact you're not that much good, and after all, that's an attitude. That's a view. How does it feel? Is it pleasant or unpleasant? Let's put it that way. Would you like more of that or less of it? If it wasn't there, that would be good. Well, that's called unpleasant feeling. And what's the unpleasant? So once you touch into, break out of the view, which is a psychological strategy to check the wave of feeling, it doesn't check it, it freezes it. We have to return to the wave of feeling. And when these senses of failure, guilt, inadequacy, and so forth, feeling sad. Sad. It is sad. We can get by, we can all manage it, we can all say, shrug it off. Well, that's true. As a personality, one does learn to cope with these things. But in terms of citta, we can see, that is definitely a sad resonance. Not complaining, just that's it. So when we kind of break through the personality view, I am this kind of a person who can't do very much, is at least failure, guilt, so forth. Break through it, and this sad, oppressed emotion. Let's just listen into that. And then this is, what does it need? Well, it needs compassion. I can't do compassion, I'm just not a very compassionate person. No, your personality doesn't do this. This is not about whether you're a compassionate person or this is a topic for citta, not the person. How does the heart sense that? Get around it. Cut off the stories, the perceptions, the reactions, the views, and just feel the sad, depleted, inadequate, not fed. And hold the space. And this is where this kind of, there's a spontaneous arising of qualities of compassion. This is where, of course, people like to have images. You can recognize, there's so much of this around now that people are kind of bringing in Kuan Yins and Dharas because the feminine represents that which listens and is compassionate. There's some heart need for that. Well, then again, we look at those perceptions or images. What are they referring to? There's an internal resonance that's they can remind us of. And that resonance sort of washes over, permeates sadness, guilt, anxiety, and so forth. And this is the point, is where devotional practice is all part of it. Classical Buddhist practice, generally, Buddha. And it may be just the male-female thing, because I'm saying, certainly in Asia, like in terms of, you've got most of the lay practitioners are female. So then the Buddha has that representation of the support, the firm, the one to look after me, the one I can go to for guidance, the listener, and then blessed Lord, someone who actually will listen to my stuff and be there for me. And generally what happens, the men, if they're interested, go and become monks. Then the Buddha's head guy, good guy, our leader, represents something slightly different, maybe. They're touching things in the psyche. And, we're saying, well, this is all a bit fantasy. Well, yeah, it's a fantasy, but most of life is a different fantasy. such a thing as a nation is a fantasy, isn't it? We say a nation like Britain, that's a fantasy projection. Money's a fantasy. Rock and roll's a fantasy, opera's a fantasy, clothes are, they're all fantasies, so why not have a decent one? Because what's a fantasy? It means a citta experience, a citta, and the ones that arise spontaneously say, well, this is the citta ways of presenting something that's actually in its own world is a reality that will actually, you know, have definite results in which I no longer get so contracted, snarled up, and grumpy and self-critical. Okay, well, I'll do that, you know. You know, so this is one of these kind of fundamental cultivations, isn't it? And we hold our painfulness and our awkwardness and see which one of these is going to turn up. And of course, we can hold the beautiful. This is appreciation. So I'm such a great guy, fantastic, but that quality that rose through me, I feel delighted, pleased with. It's not mine, but it rose through this form. It's lovely. And that form, that was beautiful too. So we see these qualities of the good, and we need to recognize and rise up to that. So the heart is refreshed with the sign of the beautiful. And this sign of gladdening is something that we need to turn to, because there's so many signs that we can turn to that are really, really saddening and sickening. And certainly this Dhamma field, cultivators, you know, if you tune in, you're certainly going to see a lot of signs that make you feel pleased. And admiration and respect. Beautiful. Yeah. Person's done this with their life. Yeah. That's beautiful. That's worthy of respect. Equanimity, ability to let things change. This was pleasant, this is unpleasant. To maintain the steadiness of mindfulness, of citta, that allows these waves to move through. So this one, you know, cultivation, the other cultivation, samadhi, does the same thing really, in that it's still a resonant effect. They're both called suffusions, pervasions. So they kind of saturate, like steam or mist, they saturate the citta with something of its own resonant qualities. And they help support it, keep it open. This is where we have to, well, in my opinion, we have to be quite aware of the problems of the word concentration, where it seems to be closed. Mindfulness does provide a sense of a container, yeah, and then one can abide within that and settle into all that which has been cleared and enjoy it and appreciate it. And this is samadhi experience. And whole nervous system gets a refresh. And of course the aim, or one aim, is these are themselves, these beautiful states are platforms, you could say, or basis from which, when you start to open into the world of circumstance, now you know what's under the lid, you know there's that facility, and you also know the kind of challenges it has to meet. And this is where insight comes in. Yeah. Because insight, once the citta has been spread out and its tangles and contractions quietened or subsided, insight enables you to see much more specifically experience as it happens. So it's called dhammas. It's like micro events. We tend to have like the little model I just presented, you know, he was rude to me yesterday or something. And actually, that experience, when you can kind of look at your micro events, a memory arises, first thing, an interpretation arises. Then him, what I actually felt wasn't him, it was a sense of sickening feeling. You know? And maybe I heard some words that gave me a very unpleasant meaning, created a sickening feeling and a contracted state. That's not a person, that's an event. That's an event. And it's a series of micro events. You know, first of all, we saw something, that's an event called consciousness. We heard something, an event called consciousness. Perception arose, that's an event, meaning, that's a perception. Feeling, unpleasant feeling, sankhara. You know, the activations, we get stimulated, that's another micro event. So all those build up to wedge into a consolidated statement about an identity. I am this, he is that. And at a time, that happened Thursday night. Well, where's the Thursday night? If it happened Thursday night, why is it still here? Yeah. So this gets frozen. What was actually a series of micro events gets welded into a unity called him, me, and then that's stored. And we store pain. And you think, this has to be crazy. If I could store anything, why not store some pleasure? But the storing is called clinging, and it's like a reflex. It's not something that we decide to do. It's the citta contracts, and then it stores that experience. You know, but then with a properly cultivated citta, you know, you can do it. You see something or you hear something, maybe sitting meditating in the machine, some machine going banga 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 banga. What's going on? It's 5 o'clock in the morning. Who's banging a machine at 5 o'clock? Uh-huh. It started. We first of all heard a sound, interpreted as a machine. Related to another meaning called 5 o'clock in the morning, related to an assumption it should be peaceful, right? So we create a series of micro events of build up, well together, then there's somebody doing it, we've added that to it. I can't see anybody, but somebody's responsible for that. We've added an invisible person there who I can feel indignant about. A mass of suffering has just been concocted. Yeah. And surely, this is 5 o'clock in the morning, meditation, a view comes in, an attitude comes in, and that's, right? So that attitude is now cemented, you know, this unpleasant experience. Yeah. I came here for this, it should be this, and it's not, you know, attitude. And look, wouldn't it be better if you just kind of heard the machine and sound? You know, sound reverberates, doesn't it? Ding, 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 ding. And crash, bang, crash, bang. And it shimmers, 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 shimmers. There's no machine. There's no person. There's no 5 o'clock in the morning. It's just bing, bing, ding, ding, ding. There's that resonance, it's reverberating. There's your meditation. That's it. Oh. We're here to stop suffering. If you do that, you know, practice like that, right? And then you, of course, there's the other machine which is going on in your head. I don't know. What am I going to do that? What did she do that for? After all, I told him this. I never get my chances. There's something to Nick, when I get back, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. And after all, it's really not fair. You're not supposed to do it for long. So, wow. I call it, Ajahn Sumedho, so listening to the cement mixer in your head. It's just churning this kind of ka-junga, junga, 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 bang, bang. All your views crashing around. Wow. wow, you know, wow, listen to this lot, you know, give me a cement mixer any day compared with this. Because every one of those sounds seems like me. In my mind, me in my mind. Whose mind is this? If it's your mind, and who are you? Perhaps it's just awareness of stuff happening, and part of what stuff happens is thoughts, and part of why we think is because there's some, we're trying to resolve something, somebody's trying to resolve something, trying to find an answer, trying to expel something, trying to figure something out, trying to get interested, something to fill up the space, yeah, which thought doesn't like. The mind feels uncomfortable, so it starts to just babble. Can't find anything good to babble about. There's always something unpleasant to babble about, because we're extremely finely attuned to displeasure. You know, it's probably more easy than pleasure. You know, you see this very fundamentally, because displeasure is something you've got to, or you go back to a very primary condition, you know, creature in the wild. There's a tiger one side, there's a carrot on the other side. Which way does the rabbit jump? He doesn't jump for the carrot, he jumps away from the tiger. Because if he jumps away from the tiger, he can get back and get the carrot another day. But if he gets for the carrot, the tiger's going to get him. So we're very attuned to that which you want to get away from instinctively. So this is why we tend to, you know, formulate around displeasure or things that are not right. And the idea of the thinking mind is our assistant who's going to sort it all out for us. Yeah, because that's what we trained it to do. Okay, so it will sort it all out. That's what the thinking mind's supposed to do. It's very good at mathematics, very good. Spelling, not bad. Learn a bit about engineering, yeah, nice, very handy. Nice little gadget, thinking mind. Only thing it doesn't do very well is not suffering. It doesn't quite. It does denial quite well, but it doesn't do non-suffering. So, you know, so often we're actually trying to get the wrong guy to do the job. And sometimes we don't even realise it. It's trying to get away from the suffering of loneliness, emptiness, nervousness, just not having a very full, rich and completed citta. So, yeah, of course. Okay. Well, yeah. So then, bring the citta into full richness and completion. And then thinking mind, oh, doesn't need to do so much. Attitudes, we don't need them. Don't need fixed views. Don't need it. This is the perspective. A nice little teaching, or half a teaching that the Buddha gave. Just one bit of it, saying, you know, how in looking after others do you look after yourself? How in looking after others, how do you look after yourself? So, because we want to look after others, how do we do that? By cultivating non-violence and patience and loving kindness and sympathy. If you cultivate these in your attitudes towards others, you will look after yourself. Because your mind will not be, your heart will not be saturated with rancor, disappointment, frustration, impatience, harshness, dismissiveness. Your heart will be free from those. So this is our ongoing cultivation and practice. Yeah. And we start somewhere small, patient with ourselves, non-violent towards ourselves. start there. Start where you can. Start where you can. Once you get the start, and you get it, and you get results, it will want to grow. We've got to cover our whole life with this.